A lot of football over the weekend. I suppose the main page is dedicated to the Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Senior Football Championship preliminary quarter finals. Brendan Devaney, good morning to you. How are you?
Yes, Greg. Good man. Yourself?
Good. It's good to have you on the show. Bit unfortunate. We'll start with a little bit of controversy, right? Because controversy is a funny one, isn't it? Because it kind of puts an asterisk over a win and then leaves another group of fans kind of feeling aggrieved. St. Eunan's versus Termon. Big result for Termon, but what's the controversy, if any?
Yeah, listen, Greg, Termon's last point was scored when they had an extra man on the pitch. Bit of controversy about that. Listen, Eunan's, that put them two up. Eunan's did get one back, but never got the equaliser. It was a one-point game, so there's one point that's questioned. So there's where the controversy lies. Listen, when a player's coming off to replace another player, they have to be... Play can continue as long as that player is almost off the pitch. You know, as long as they're nowhere near
actively looking to go off.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in this instance, Greg, the player was coming off. Now, I rang the defender that was closest to him because I was trying to get my head around it last night. Now, doing things against or an objection now, Greg, it's not something that anybody likes doing, but I wanted to get myself into the mindset. So I asked the player, were you watching that player that was supposed to be off the pitch? And he said, yeah, he was watching him, which meant that he wasn't. In the mindset of picking up the player who scored the point. So in that mind, Greg, yeah, I mean, it was the officials that should have stopped or maybe cancelled the point, taken time and cancelled the point and give Termon the ball again to take it over, which should have happened at the time. That didn't happen, Greg. So now it's in the realms of, it was a breach. So you're looking at, you know, potentially, if Eunan's did object, you know, there could be a fine, there could be a replay, or they could be given the game if they were to object.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to mull that over, right? An awful lot of time and effort has gone into it. And if they feel there's, you know, strong enough grounds in terms of rules being breached, there's probably a responsibility on them for their fans to appeal this, but at the same time they don't want to be seen as sore losers. It's a tough one, but so much goes into these campaigns. There's such dedication and such disappointment when it doesn't go your way. But if it doesn't go your way and you feel that it's outside of your responsibility, you know, it's a toughie, sticky wicket, as they might say in cricket.
Yeah, it is, Greg. Listen, you're 100% right. I mean, it's an awkward one, taking nothing away from Termon. Eunan's were county champions. Termon was going on as underdogs. They played brilliantly. To me, they deserved the victory on the day. But when I look back at where that player was, listen, the officials should have dealt with that there and then, Greg. We shouldn't even be talking about this now. The thing about it is, Greg, is that, you know, to me, and I've spoken about this before in the show, this shouldn't be down to St. Eunan's. Terms of dealing with this, you know, the CCC or some level of adjudication should come in and say, because if Eunan's now do this, then they're the bad guys, when really this wasn't their fault.
Yeah, but it's a lot to expect say generally speaking, I'm not speaking about this, but it's very hard, is it not, to expect, say, for instance, the officials to refer themselves effectively on this, to sort of admit that they maybe got it wrong or something was, you know, outside of Eunan's making the appeal, who brings it to the CCC's attention? I think it would be a big ask to expect officials, because they may well rightfully believe they didn't do anything wrong. So I don't see how it finds itself before the CCC without one of the teams get involved in it. I know exactly where you're coming from. I'm just trying to figure out how that one might work.
No, that's the way it's set up. Now, the ref can include something in his report, but really that's not what it'll come down to. It'll come down to whether Eunan's want to pursue it any further or not. And, you know, when you see a couple of Eunan's players did complain at the time, you can see them in the video saying here, that guy was on the pitch. There was a spare player on the pitch. At that point, I think the ref needed to go over his linesman and say, was that player still on the pitch? And if he was, they should have retaken the ball, given the ball back to Termon and replayed that play basically from where it was. Now, the fact that it's gone to where it is, like you say, that's completely up to St. Eunan's, what kind of course they wanted. And it's a bit, I suppose, like, listen, there's no winners in this, because in my view, when I was playing in that, you never wanted to do anything like this. I mean, we had that objection in 97, which I think haunted Ayrua for, and still haunts him taking a championship off Unions the way that happened. And to my mind, there's always this thing of, but then, from a Unions perspective, did that player interfere with the play?
From a Thurmond perspective, to a man, do they believe that player wasn't interfering with play? And are they happy enough to you know, proceed in the championship with that big asterisk? I don't know.
I think if Unions don't, that they just get on with it. If they're drawing Niamh Connell in the semi, and I mean it's been a phenomenal couple of years from, you know, coming one in intermediate last year and how well they're performing this year. But it's not really down to that, Greg. It's down to the question mark of whether that player interfered with the Union's defence when the ball went into the corner forward.
The sense coming in, and I get the impression it's up from Letterkenny, I can sum it up in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 words. Take your beating, Unions, bad losers. Okay, but look, anyway, it's not insignificant. Looking at the, I seen some of the Downing's players yesterday, big strong lads, and they've got plenty of games ahead of them. But disappointment, despite the spirited fight back, they seem to always be nearly there or thereabouts, and then miss out. But Sean McCool said stood strong and they progressed. So another season at this level in this competition over for Downing's.
Yeah, and they've been competing brilliantly. Like you have to say, Maxi down there and Barney and the boys down there, the current lads, they've really put a shape in Downing's, you know, coming up from intermediate a couple of seasons ago. You know, they've competed so well in the championship. They could have very easily got a result or beat Niamh Connell. Same with Dunlow, you know, went down and bet Kilkear, who a lot of people are talking about now are dark horses for the championship. So they've had a couple of great performances in it. Maybe a bit disappointing to lose to St. Paul's that day. But certainly, as you were saying there, I mean, McCool's, the battering of McCool's has happened a lot in games. They run into a lead and then they get chased down, and it's happened to them in three big championship games now in particular. But at the end, the goals kill it. And just when Downing's were trying to get that leveller point, and it looked like the momentum was all with them, McCool's had that second goal. It was a real killer blow for everything they'd put into the game. So it was tough on them. But listen, again, McCool's doing really well this year. You know, they're really year on year. You've got to say Gary Wilson's improving them. And of course, they were playing without Oisin Gallen.
Four Masters are an interesting story. They overcome Glen Swilly. You know, we've talked about the past, about them, you know, resurging, maybe not fulfilling potential. Here they are now into the last eight of the biggest competition, and getting past Glen Swilly in a tight game.
Yeah, listen, Greg, two very young teams, you know, and of course, again, talking about Oisin Gallen, Michael Murphy's been missing for Glen Swilly, and you just think, put him in the mix of that game yesterday, surely that would have been a very different match, if you like. But listen, he wasn't there, and listen, it was a very even first half. Kind of contrasting styles for Masters, maybe going after the ball here up the pitch, and Connell drop or Glen Swilly dropping back in the zonal type play. Nothing really at half time, and then Glistener start the second half from Four Masters, but then a brilliant fight back from Glen Swilly. Some great two pointers in it, and again just them late moments in the game, and I suppose the two car fellas, particularly Senna and Turner, you know, were probably the difference between the teams. And they've had a lot of ding-dongs at underage for Masters and Glen Swilly, so doing a lot of great work at both clubs. But there is this common nature of Four Masters, Greg, that because of their absolute dominance at every level underage, that it's only a matter of time before they make a breakthrough. And is this a season too early or not? Remains to be seen. But I think they've got a great management team there too, Barry Dunyan and the likes of Barry Monaghan and Mickey Dock and that in there. So listen, they're on the up and up, but is this a season too soon for them? That remains to be seen, of course.
But you can't not find that out unless you're in it, and they're in the melting pot now. You talk about young players and young teams and people coming through, and Niamh Connell of a star in Shane Malone as well, featured significantly for them, overcoming Killy Beggs by a goal and 5 points. They would have been expected to win that game, of course, but still, you have to go out and perform on the day, don't you?
Yeah, because Kelly Beggs are going well. Again, so many teams in Donegal now have become competitive again. You know, if this was played a couple of seasons ago, you wouldn't even think there'd be any closeness in this match. But certainly, Kelly Beggs are getting their act together. And Niamh Conlon have had a funny season so far by their own high standards. But certainly, like, when it comes to knockout championship, you do well to bet against them. And of course, if things stay as they are, they play Termon in the semi-final. So listen, maybe things just starting to come together for Niamh Conlon.
More texts coming in. They're not long. St. Unions were beat. Get over it. That's the general thrust of what we're getting in from it. Have I covered all the prelim quarterfinals? There's a whole host of intermediate games and other action too that you're going to be all across, aren't you?
The prelims all been covered. Yeah, just the other semi-final is Gidoa and Kilkear. It's come next week, Greg. Yep.
Build up, yeah, okay. So, what's on the show this evening? You have obviously analysis from all of those games and the ones that we didn't mention. Brendan Kilcoyne's with you and Ryan Ferry, two great lads. It'll be interesting to see if you're as measured in your conversation or if they think St. Union's all right. I don't know. I think when you're in studio, we might see the we might see your gums on this one, will we?
I know people are texting it. Like, I'm honestly, I don't think you got at all. You know, I'm not.
Chill, dude. I'm only joking.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, people often, like, you know, when you're chairing a show and that, and it's the same actually with Donegal playing. I'm completely open to the process and the rules. And I say, hats off to Termon. To me, outside of that situation, I thought they deserved the match. They played really well the week before, too, and fair play to them. And that's the way I am about sport. But listen, was there definite a question mark over that McCormick score? There definitely is. So listen, that's not down to me. I won't have any involvement in this whatsoever. That'll be down to
opinion I'm on about. Listen, it's all good. Yeah, well, listen, it's all good.
I spoke to the referees about it this morning. Like, I spoke to the player involved. So that's how I have formed opinions, yeah. You know, and as people saying, this isn't really down to somebody taking a beating in it. This is just round. Was there a
break? If there were 10 points in it, we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
The 1 point green rate, and it's the last score of the game. So listen, there's a question mark there, but all we're doing is throwing out as the back page of the Donegal News says today, you know, there's a potential appeal there. Maybe there won't be any appeal, but that's definitely a big talking point from the championship, as is, you know, the intermediate at the weekend as well, got the semi-final stage.
Niamh Mara, big win for them. Niamh Columba, big win for them as well. A high scoring game there as well. Lots of good action. Red Hughes, Edge Bundoran as well. And I suppose for their supporters, and this is why your show's so great, for the supporters and their teams, they're all recognised. So there'll be plenty of chat about all of that and some of the ones that I didn't get to there as well. Brendan, it is always a pleasure. You're on air live just after the 7 o'clock news. You can listen to the show or indeed head into the den, stick on the TV, the smart TV, open up YouTube and just watch it, man. Just watch it. Chill out. All right, Brendan, take care, buddy.
That's Oisin's point of view on the possible infringement.
Do you know what? I'd love to get him in, sitting down in here and just thrash it out with him.
Hey, you won't find them now if you go.
No, he's got. What's that? Someone's just ran out the door, Brendan. I don't know what's going on, buddy.
All right,
cheers. Take care of yourself. That's Brendan Devaney there. 086 60 25,000. If you've got a view on that, by the way, and I would love if we could introduce a little bit more sport just into the general conversation on the show as well. Feel free to comment at any stage because that's important to some people here. You know, obviously, Manchester United fans aren't going to have the phone out today. But, you know, if you're into your boxing, maybe you wanted to talk about our new female world boxing champion, or if you wanted to talk a little bit about the football, Finn Harps. I follow Finn Harps casually. And I never post about them because I'm bad luck, right? I never post about them. So on Friday night, wasn't it? I put a post for the first time up in ages on my Facebook page. Good luck with Finn Harps against Cork City tonight. Big game. An awful lot in the offing. And I had set send and blooming hell, Cork City went up and knocked one in and went on to 3-0, win 3-0. And I was just thinking, why did I get involved? Why couldn't I have just let the God, you know what I mean, decide? It seems as soon as I expressed any some sort of a support for a football team, they were banjaxed. But anyway, listen, it's been a great season and promotion is still not out of the question for Finn Harps either. So, you know, athletics, football, boxing, GEA, anything like that there. When at the start of the show, when I say, what do you want to talk about or what have you got an opinion on? You know, get the conversation started on something like that important for you. People from Termin or St. Unans should have been texting us first thing this morning. We can have those convos here as well, notwithstanding the amazing coverage you're going to get tonight on the issue. But this, you know, if that's something you want to talk about, feel free to get that into us as well. I mean, we've well covered now at this point, but you know what I mean. Now, listeners to this program who've listened over the years would have heard the case of Margaret and Paula Martin. They were victims of Con Cunningham, a former priest of the Diocese of Raphoe. The Diocese of Raphoe has issued an apology to Margaret and Paula. Monsignor Kevin Gillespie is diocesan administrator in the Diocese of Raphoe, and he joins us now. Thank you for joining us, Father. I do appreciate your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. As far as you see it, as far as the diocese sees it, how did we arrive at this point today in terms of what these sisters had to endure, the process, and where we're at now?
Well, the apology that was made public today is, I suppose I would want to say, it's really in many respects an initiative of Margaret and Paula in this respect, that again, without wishing to represent their feelings, but as I understand it, that they felt that they had never really gotten answers for a lot of questions that they experienced. There was an experience of non-communication with the diocese that was not helpful. And in a few months ago, they wanted, I suppose, an acknowledgement of what they had experienced, and also I think their wider experience that Con Cunningham's case in particular had, I suppose, caused in various parishes.
In the statement, it reads, "I wish to acknowledge that our diocese failed profoundly in its pastoral responsibilities of care and concern for your well-being during the years from 1994 to 2018. I acknowledge that we failed to fulfil our own policy of reporting complaints of this nature to the civil authorities between 1996 and 2002. I acknowledge that during the period 2002 until Con Cunningham's conviction in 2018, it was not made clear within the diocese that he was the subject of complaints of child sexual abuse and therefore potentially a risk to children." What was happening over those time periods that there was so much that should have been done that wasn't being done? There was information that should have been passed on that there wasn't. Like, what was happening then in this very recent history? And I suppose I'm asking that question with a view to ensuring that it couldn't happen again. In your view, in your investigation, with your knowledge, what was happening within the church over those periods of time that let these sisters down so much? You've acknowledged what actually happened, but what was the culture or the decision-making process, the accidental nature of it, the deliberate nature of it? Can you talk to that for me, please?
Well, I think there was probably the particular and the general, that there were particular failures in this case, because Con Cunningham acknowledged, at least sufficiently, for Bishop Hegarty initially to accept substantially that Margaret and Paula were telling the truth. He then was transferred, and there was just a failure then to properly pursue this matter.
Was there a failure or a cover-up, Father?
I think it was a failure rather than a cover-up, is how I would read it. The first guidelines came in. You know, first of all, I want to say, Margaret and Paula, it's extraordinary how courageous they were in coming forward in 1994. This was just when these things were really being brought to light. And their motivation at that time was very clearly for the protection of other children who might be exposed to these kinds of behaviours and crimes. And the first guidelines were introduced in 1996. The matter should have been reported to the Gardaí immediately, of course. And ultimately then...
So, Father, just why might it not have been... why might it not have been reported to the Gardaí immediately?
I don't have an adequate answer for that, Greg, to be honest with you. There were reports, professional reports were provided on Con Cunningham, and it seems that that a decision was taken or not taken that should have been taken at the time. He should have been removed at that time, and the matter should have been reported.
So it was. Are you saying that? So it was decided not to report it.
Yes.
And who might have made that decision?
Well, there was the diocese was in an interim period after Bishop Hegarty's transfer, and then Bishop Boyce was bishop. He did ultimately take the initiative of reporting it 2002. And Con was removed from ministry at that time.
And there's also an acceptance that it was not made clear within the diocese that this person was the subject of complaints of child sexual abuse and therefore potentially a risk to children. So effectively, the church there, and correct me where I'm wrong, because I want to make sure I get this right, is conceding that it knew he was a potential threat to children, but that wasn't made clear. What happened there? What went wrong there?
Certainly in that period, it was the practice in many instances to address a parish where a priest had to be removed on foot of these allegations. In Con Cunningham's case, this was not only was removed in 2002. He had himself acknowledged, not as fulsomely as certainly his conviction would prove, but he had acknowledged substantially that he had behaved, in a manner that gave credence to what Paul and Margaret had said. And in some way, it would have been certainly better had some sort of communication be given at that time when he was removed from Fulcara for the reasons for his being removed. The lack of this taking place left questions in people's minds. There were also narratives partly put out by himself and those that he persuaded that he was treated unfairly. But it would have been much better at the time and much more appropriate to have it acknowledged the reasons for his removal.
Explain the phraseology in terms of what led to this apology at the prompting of Margaret and Paula. Is that legalese or has the diocese been pressured into?
No. The Margaret and Paula had approached the diocese, and they wished for a really adequate apology to be issued and that it would be eventually made public. And this led to a process of engagement. We engaged a facilitator, and I would say that certainly from my perspective, it was a profoundly, very intense, profoundly moving, and also an experience that provided great learning and insight into their experience, into their real life situation throughout this period. And that ultimately then, obviously, we composed this apology after that process of engagement with them face to face. Bishop Boyce and Bishop McGookian were also present and involved. And then we were very happy to make public this apology. And the purpose of it is to encourage others to come forward. there may be not only victims of Con Cunningham, but of anybody. And to come forward if they haven't done so already, they may not be ready now, but that they would know that this, that they would be supported and encouraged in doing so.
Okay. I mean, can the public be satisfied that, you know, say, for instance, there are currently no allegations out there of this nature against a serving priest, either in the diocese where the or in the area that the accusations might stem from, or you know them in a different part of the diocese. There's nothing outstanding at the moment that has not been divulged.
No, there is not. And from 2002, if not before that, all of these matters are reported immediately to the Gardaí, to Tuusla now, which is the competent body, and we have a very active and effective safeguarding officer in the person of Margaret Northwich. So, and an awful lot of work is done in parishes and training, in our own clergy and in their training as students to address this plague in the life of the church.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Monsignor, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it. Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, Diocesan Administrator with the Diocese of Raphoe. Margaret and Paula Martin have issued their own statement, and it reads, following on from the outcome of the process of engagement with the Diocese of Raphoe regarding their handling of the reporting by us of sexual abuse perpetrated on us by Con Cunningham when we were children, we wish to thank the following: our sons, who lit up our lives from the day they were born and who cemented our courage to keep walking; our families, Brendan, Paula, parents and siblings, for their unwavering support; and our friends for being there; Dr. Brenda Davis, consultant psychiatrist and spiritual healer, for her amazing care, support and love, and for guiding us to transform pain into positive action. Her light is very much part of this day. The GPs at Ballyrain Park Surgery, our counsellors and complementary therapists who supported our mind and bodies through this long process. Our solicitor, Dariana Conlon, our barrister, Fintan Valentine, and the staff of Caldwell and Robinson Solicitors, the expertise of Dariana and Fintan shone every step of the way, not only in their legal support, but also their understanding of the pain and their ability to hold the space with deep compassion. The representatives of the Diocese of Raphoe, Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, Bishop Alan McGaughian, and Bishop Philip Boyce, who took the courage to open and participate in this process. Hannah Carney, who facilitated the process with such professionalism, creating a safe place for everyone. Edward Gleeson, who suggested this process of resolution and peace. The very courageous person who successfully took the first case against Con Cunningham. You gave us the courage we needed to speak. Last but not least, deep gratitude to each other for the support, for lifting each other up when we fell, for finding the love and courage in each other to get to this day. Now we look forward to closing the chapter of our lives and allowing healing to finally close these wounds. We encourage others who are suffering in silence to come forward and find the support you deserve. In peace, Margaret and Paula Martin. Now, and I was wondering, had this conversation actually before I knew we were going to be talking about this, if there's something that maybe we need to be doing to try and help people or guide people or advise people if they have been the subject of this type of abuse. And I'll tell you the supports that are there in a moment within the church, but I was minded, and not to connect the cases of Edward Gallagher from Orchard Park in Lifford. He came to public notoriety following a video that surfaced on Facebook, and he's charged now with one count of attempted sexual communication with a child between the 2nd of April and 17th of April 2025. He's further charged with offences including inciting a child to engage in sexual activity and causing a child to watch sexual activity on the 17th of September. Now, it's reported from that court case that there could be more than 60 possible victims in a case involving a Catholic priest, that being Edward Gallagher. And that's 60 people that potentially now was the right time for them to speak out, or did they speak out and they weren't listened to? Is it the fact that they've seen this person now before the courts and they have the confidence to speak out now? What makes people come forward at this time, and do we have a role or can we help in that regard? Because, you know, that's one person and one case that we've all stumbled upon, but that's potentially over 60 people that could potentially be impacted by this in one form or other, trying to choose my words carefully so I don't in any way harm any potential case. But then how many are out there that have suffered this type of abuse at the hands of a priest, at the hands of another person of trust, you know, outside of the family? And, you know, you could be 45, 55, and you could have held on to this trauma for all of this time and feel you can't be speak out or you can't be believed. You know, I mean, if there's any role that we have in getting advice or information or empowering people, I would, you know, I'd love to be involved in that. And I don't know what that is and I don't know what that looks like. I just wonder, and I'm conscious of when we talk about things like that, this could be bringing to the surface other people's experiences at the hand of a priest or some other trusted person. But if it is to do with the church and you have a concern or a complaint of child abuse, either current or historical, you're asked to contact Margaret Northage, the designated liaison person for this diocese that we're talking of here. It's a different diocese to Edward Gallagher, of course. This is the Diocese of Raphoe. And I have her contact details here. You can also contact TUSLA, the Garda National Protection Services Bureau, or in an emergency, the Gardaí 9167 100. There's also free counselling and support available through Towards Healing. It's an independent organisation providing professional support for people who've experienced institutional, clerical or religious abuse in Ireland. I've got all of those numbers here. We might print them on our Facebook page so that you can see them. But as I say, you know, like, 60, more than 60 people potentially from this other recent case that have now said, wow, it wasn't just me, or that was me, I was that child at one point, or whatever it might be, and everything has to be proven in a court of law, and I'm speaking quite generally. It's just an awful lot of pain, an awful lot of maybe suppressed memories and what have you. And as I say, if there's a role for us in helping guide people in that situation to the authorities or to peace in themselves or whatever it might be, and I don't know what it is, you know, that's what we're here for. That's something we could do. Margaret and Paula Martin, incredible people with what they achieved, and they were supported by incredible people as well, clearly, as stated in their press release. And let us hope, as they, in their own words, that they can now look forward to closing this chapter on their lives and allowing healing to finally close their wounds. Ain't to Rep Mary T. Sweeney's back on the show with us because there's another meeting coming up as it relates to traffic issues in Letterkenny. It's an open invitation to all neighbourhoods to public meeting number 2, where you're invited to raise any concerns you might have re traffic and infrastructure. And it's at the Station House Hotel, Lower Main Street, Letterkenny, on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Why the need for the second meeting, Mary? Good morning to you.
Because the initial meeting, we had an actual petition form to go out to get people to sign in their neighbourhoods. So it was to bring that back. And since that, I've also met with people from to get community groups set up. We've invited people on the petition to identify if they were interested in becoming part of a residents' association or a community group. So tonight we'll collate, on Wednesday night, we'll collate all that information and go through it. From those that have come back already, we've been able to email people or send them a text message to say about Wednesday night. And I think a very positive step from the council post our meeting, as there's been multiple acknowledgement at council level of the need for, and thankfully the chairman has said it himself, an actual workshop, all inclusive, all the different bodies brought together with the Residents Association. And that's the success of the people coming together on the street.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's really positive, and thank you all the councillors that are now taking this on board. But we need to pursue it and push it further. And we have to thank all yourself, Greg, and all the media for the coverage that they gave, for the opportunity to the public to have their voices and concerns heard.
What do you think can come from this, though, right? So we can get everyone on the same page saying, right, enough is enough. and this, that and thon. But at the end of the day too, we do have plans which were approved at council, say for instance, and some people will think they'll make the situation worse, you know, more traffic lights, you know, lanes being tightened, etc. So what's actually in the planning by many people's estimation is actually going to make things worse, right? So outside of that, do those types of works need to be stalled and other measures brought in to try and get traffic moving? Do you know what I'm trying to get at is what's the end game in all of this, as far as you'd see?
Well, the end game for me is to open up the door that's been closed for a long time with proper, adequate public consultation. So to do that, you need, because Letterkenny's become so expansive. Remember, Greg, I'm from an era that the council came to the meetings with the engineers to the public. Now it's become much more segregated, and it's much more, and even the councillors are telling me that they have difficulties in getting that direct contact. I believe that with the right backing, that our councillors need to take back a bit of the control to make sure that they can represent the views from the public, or they're doing a disservice to the public. From the last meeting, people from the Glencarry area have approached me and asked me, you know, that they need somebody just to facilitate the platform for them to speak, and we need the media then to take those points that they make and bring it into discussion stages that it can be thrashed out to find the best solution forward. That's all I'm trying to do, and any success is a success. From that last meeting, I see that Donald Coyle had been one of the councillors, has saying that since 2009 there was a planning to put lights on the Old Town Bridge because of a priority by the council because of the dangers of people trying to cross. Like, it's 2009. It's embarrassing to mention that. And yet people are still taking their life with their hand crossing the Old Town Bridge or the, you know, parts of other areas around the town that are very difficult to cross, the hospital roundabout. Again, a proper, you know, number of pedestrian crosses would be important there.
But that all slows traffic up, though, you see, and this is all about traffic, isn't it, and traffic infrastructure.
No, the priority should be about safety on the roads, full stop.
Okay, so in other words, if Letterkenny gets busier but pedestrians feel safer, that's a price worth paying, for an example.
Well, I think with the proper access roads, with the additional access roads that we all recognise are needed, that will actually make Letterkenny safer from a vehicular point of view. Mm-hmm. But we also must be very conscious if they're pushing everybody out to bicycles and walking. Now, our weather's very inclement, as they say, and winter's not a great time to be walking or cycling around Letterkenny with the frost and the ice and the landscape and the topography of our environment around here. Then, you know, the reality is we are still going to need roads no matter what Europe wants, if you know what
I mean. No, I get you. Okay, listen, and we'll follow up after the next meeting. It's this Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. at Station House Hotel, Lower.
Downstairs in the Station House Hotel.
Okay, perfect stuff. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you for your support.
No problem. Take care of yourself. Right. Now, as is the way now, people are kind of up to high dough, and if they see any development whatsoever, they either suspect themselves that it's going to be an iPass centre or something along those lines, or there are those, and it's quite lucrative actually, that will sort of try and stir that because it boosts engagement. So we were concerned and contacted by concerned people about the status of the old Lifford Hospital, people claiming work was ongoing and there wasn't planning permission and so on and so forth. But just to get clarity for you, that the HSC is currently carrying out refurbishment works at the old Lifford Hospital. These works are planned to last for 6 months, and once complete, the building will accommodate the Donegal East Children's Disability Network team. So there's 6 months of work ongoing, and it is with a review to repurposing that building to accommodate the Donegal East Children's Disability Network team. So just to be absolutely clear in relation to that. Now, Grainne Griffin is Director of Communications with Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, the CCPC, and joins us on the programme now. Hiya, Grainne.
Good morning.
Right, we learned today that more than a quarter of Irish adults have no financial arrangements for retirement, an increase on 21% last year. That feels low to me. You know, I maybe it's just the circles I move in or the county and the region I'm from, but I would say it's probably closer to half. But I'm anecdotal, you're working off stats. What's your feelings?
Yeah, it's disappointing. Certainly in the CCPC, we are disappointed with the results that we saw this year. we're not seeing any increase in the number of people who hold a pension. And then usually we would also see a lot of people who say, I don't have a pension, but I have another plan. Like maybe I'm planning on buying a property and renting it out, or I'm planning on selling a rental property and using that income. And that has completely fallen off over the last couple of
years.
So
that's a good, that was going to be one of my questions. So say, for instance, someone is in a 5-bed house, they're going to downsize and move into a smaller property, and that gap they're hoping will assist them through their later life. That would be classed then, would it, as whether it's a good one or not, a financial arrangement for retirement?
If the person declares it as that. So yeah. We do ask people, have you got a plan, and what would it be? So yeah, what we're seeing here and the numbers that we're highlighting are the number of people who just say, I don't have a plan. Mm. I don't know what I'm going to do. And within that group, you see a lot of people saying, well, yeah, look, I'll get the state pension. But the state pension, as you no doubt know, is less than €300 a week. And so you are looking at potentially people really seeing this huge drop in income when they reach retirement. And really, that's very concerning, because as you will know, that to get a pension that's really going to cover your needs, you need to start as early as possible so it can build up over time. But also, it's never too late. And so to that big cohort in their 40s and their 50s or even 60s out there who don't have a pension, we would be saying, please do book an appointment with a financial advisor, or ask your employer to put you in touch with a financial advisor, and get a plan started, because it's not too late and there's huge tax benefits.
Yeah, I'm kind of maybe of a generation that has a distrust of this, that pension pots might be raided, that I'm committing, you know, financially money that I don't really necessarily have every week or month or whatever it might be, in the hope that at some point it will make my life so better. So how do you convince someone like me to not you literally, obviously, Grania, you have enough on your plate, right? But to trust the system that it is a fair bet for a more comfortable retirement?
Well, pension products are highly regulated. And I think people are right to be cynical when it comes to financial products. We see a lot of people who go looking for a great deal, or, you know, starting thinking about things like crypto or other kind of radical new investments, and who lose a lot of money. I think the thing with the pensions industry is that it's highly regulated, very established, and it has been in place for decades. So we can see the results. And people do get pensions as a result of investing in pensions. And those pension products become more conservative the closer you get to retirement, to make sure that you don't lose your money. So obviously there are always risks. There's risks with every type of financial product. But ultimately the risks with pensions are much smaller than the risks of going into your retirement unprepared. Because ultimately when you stop earning, you still have potentially decades of your life ahead of you, and all sorts of costs, including rising healthcare costs and all these things that you need to meet. And that's what pensions are there for.
Did you maybe able to catch in this, or maybe it's a different piece of work, of how many don't have it? Not because they're ignorant or they're living for the day, but simply can't afford it. You know, this, again, maybe it's the circles I mix in, but there's not a ton of space there to sort of start putting them money away for a rainy day when it feels like you're drowning today.
Yeah, something we always look at in the CCBC when we go out about pensions is to try and understand, what is it that's driving people? Is it just an affordability issue, you know, where they really want it, but they just can't make things stretch any further? Or is it just that they haven't got around to it, or it's too challenging? And what we've seen is that the cost of it does come through as a significant factor, but that's actually going down. It's around a third. So for the other 70%, they haven't put it in there as their main reason. You know, we see things like, I do plan to do it, but I just haven't got around to it. So yes, for some people, it will be a cost issue. And I suppose what is worth exploring there is just how much tax back you get. And so how even giving a very, very small amount regularly,
is there a possibility of giving an example about that, if there is a typical example of what that actually means? So like, you know, what is there a figure, is there a recommended monthly figure that you should be paying into a pension? And then what would be the tax advantages of that? Grania, I know you're in the director of communications bracket, and I'm asking sort of legal questions, and maybe it's just not your wheelhouse. You're brilliant in what you're doing. But I think sometimes maybe people don't get over that first step to explore it. Maybe it's a different separate feature we could do.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And there is more information coming out on this all the time. And I suppose not to duck it in any way, but it does depend on the person's circumstances because people live wildly different lives. Some people live very humble, low-cost lives and other people live very extravagant lives. And people have very different expectations of how they plan to live in retirement. So I suppose the general guide that you would give people is assuming that you don't have substantial like housing or rental costs into retirement. So if you are in the position where you will have paid your mortgage, maybe you're not going to be renting, then they say round about half of your current income is probably what you'll want in retirement. So obviously for someone who's on 100,000, that's 50,000. For someone who's on 40,000, that's 20. Yeah, yeah. But that's your starting point, is work out what you might want. Then you're looking at the public sector pension. If you have a full, you know, if you've got stamps or you've got credits, you've got a full, then that's going to bring you maybe about 15,000 or so, potentially, maybe a bit less. And then you're looking at the difference. And then really it depends on when you pay in and when you start paying in, how much time and how much opportunity there is for your money to build up. But for, say, somebody who starts investing early in a pension and they pay into it over their whole career, by the time they retire, maybe a quarter of that will be actually what they've paid in, and the other 75% might be what they've earned on what they've paid in. So it can be that big of a difference where your actual contribution might only be a quarter of your pension. Everything else is what you've earned as it's accumulated over the course of your career.
I'm short on time, but I appreciate yours. 18 to 24-year-olds, 18% have a pension. I mean, there's an age factor there, but also I wonder, is there moms and dads going, well, we never had one and, you know, it's a waste of money and you never know what might happen? And or is it that they don't know the options that are there, or maybe they don't see the fat and the wages to afford it? I wonder what's going on with that age cohort, because it's much easier if they start.
Actually, I would say that age cohort, when you look at the data, are the most responsible. They are the least likely to say that they don't plan to ever have a pension. And in fact, most of them either say that they've plenty of time, they're getting to it, but they've lots of time, or they plan on starting soon. Actually, a third of them say they plan on starting soon. So we do seem to have quite a responsible generation of young people out there. And of course, they are facing all sorts of other costs as well in terms of housing and saving for houses and all of those. So we'd be conscious of that. I think it's really people who are in their 40s, in their 50s, or maybe late 30s, that you'd be really encouraging to move as quickly as possible to set up an appointment with a financial advisor and get a private pension or a supplementary pension in place so that they're adequately protected for retirement.
And of course, people might think that this new opt-out system coming up is the answer, but there's perhaps better tax incentives with a private pension. Look into all of that and seek independent advice, I would suggest, would you?
Absolutely. I mean, the auto enrollment is going to be a brilliant initiative. And in the generations to come, we should see this sea change in pension coverage and protection. But if you were already like over 30 or you're on the higher rate of tax, potentially you really need to be taking out a private pension. The starting contributions for auto enrollment are really very low, and you'd really need to probably be paying more or potentially looking at a different type of product to get the best possible outcome for your retirement.
Or I might try and find an elderly millionaire and marry them, but that's not good advice. Thanks very much, Grainne. Look after yourself. Thanks for your time. That's Grainne Griffin, Director of Communications at the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Lots of you texting in. I find the whole, I don't think it's me discouraging or giving you a view. I just sometimes find the pensions a little bit like the private health insurance. It would be great to be able to afford it, but I think so many of us feel that we can't, because you come to the end of the month and you don't have anything spare that you could put in towards the pension or put in towards private health insurance. That's how it feels. Honestly, that's how it feels for me. I don't know about you guys. But anyway, listen, loved your company today. Thanks so much for listening to the 9 till noon show. We're going to be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.